of Sports 180 today on this hump day edition. Kicking off now, I'm Heather Harrington along with Eric Kane. Sam Foreman back at the Budweiser Studios pushing all of the right buttons. I have not been able to read it yet, but apparently Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic talked to health experts and wrote up an article, and I know that there's a lot of snippets of that being passed around, so that's definitely something that I'm bookmarking, but basically saying that at this point in time, it's not proven that if you have COVID once, you have immunity for it. Yeah. for the rest of your life. So that is something that, you know, this is an ever-evolving situation.
So you mean all the doctors out there saying, let's go ahead and get this thing so we don't get it again? You know, they're wrong? All those doctors out there just hanging out everywhere?
I just...
Sarcasm.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Everybody's guessing at this point. Yeah. As research is being done, and we'll see how this moves into the college sports realm and how sports is going to be able to deal with this. We talked about it with one of the callers earlier, just the fragility of the college football process. And some senators had some questions for the different representatives of college football that were on Capitol Hill today. And part of their conversations were about COVID-19. And a couple of senators asked, why does the NCAA not have a national standard for COVID-19 like pro sports do? And Andy Katz, he pointed out, I think very poignantly, he says, this is an example of how the NCAA is different from the professional leagues. It's not a professional league. They cannot dictate policy without going through a process. There are three divisions, a board of governors, and several subcommittees. Individual conferences run the college football and FBS seasons. So, I mean, the fact that there are so many chiefs and not just one chief and a bunch of Indians, it's really hard to dictate, especially when budgets are completely different from all of the different levels, even the haves of the have-nots of the Power Five. Budgets are different, and testing is very expensive.
Yeah, testing is very, very expensive. Plus, you're talking about, if you're in the professional ranks, you're talking about a limited number of athletes, a limited number of teams. There are over, what, 100 plus?
130, just...
130 FBS.
Division I FBS, yeah.
There's more basketball programs, okay? And then you have FCS, you have Division II, Division III, and you just it just wouldn't work that way. And so you kind of almost need this type of setup. And you're right, this is how unique and different amateur is compared to professionals. And that's kind of the standard that NCAA has kind of been sitting on this entire time.
I will be anxious to see how many Division II and Division III sports programs are able to be played this year.
Well, another...
And that's across the board. That's football. That's everything. Yeah.
Another D3... I got in my update from this morning. I don't know what happened to it. Another D3 school in Iowa canceled football and fall sports for the fall, and then there was a Division II school, I want to say on Friday of last week, that went ahead and canceled it. That's the only D2 school that I've heard of so far, but sadly, I mean, you're probably right. There's going to be more to come. I mean, especially if students aren't allowed on campus, because, I mean, when you're at the lower levels, Division II, Division III, you recruit athletes in order to help with your admissions, because a lot of times you can't give full scholarships. D3, you can't give scholarships at all, and so, or athletic scholarships. And so you recruit athletes and you say, well, yeah, come on, yeah, come on, yeah, come on, in order to help with your, you know, tuition, your income for the school. And if you cancel sports, a lot of those people are just going to leave. And so, I mean, it's a whole big mess.
Yeah, that is. And it's all day today. I mean, nobody knows how this, if anybody has a crystal ball and they can tell us, old school shout out to Miss Cleo. Like, if we could reincarnate Miss Cleo and have her just tell us everything's going to be okay by the time December, the end of December rolls around for 2020, mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it's just so hard. There's no predicting what's even going to happen next week, much less 6 months down the road.
I feel like we're just all treading water, like everyone is. I mean, yeah. You think about in the sports world, you know, coaches, ADs, presidents, sports radio hosts, you know, their CEOs, I mean, you know, business leaders, managers. No one knows. I mean, no, this has never happened before. No one knows what it's going to look like in a week and a half. So you're right. It's just, I mean, it literally is a day by day, week by week situation. And you're just trying to get by and survive and figure this thing out until We can get back to work. We can go into the buildings. We can, you know, go to concerts and stuff like that and kind of get back to a normal way of life.
A couple of things that crossed my radar throughout our show, and this will be so sad if SoFi Stadium isn't even able to open up this year in L.A., but SoFi Stadium, they finished their video board, 70,000 like square inches or something of video board majesty. This thing is absolutely beautiful. Like between this and the Raiders' new Roomba Stadium, it's incredible.
I have seen this stadium in real life, the Roomba.
You've seen the Roomba?
I haven't been in, but I've driven by it about 12 times.
Wow.
One trip to Vegas. My gosh, it is freaking cool.
Yeah.
It is so cool. I mean, everyone's seen pictures of it by now, but I mean,
I even want to go to a Raiders game with the Allegiant flight that we have in Knoxville. Like, I would go to the Raider, go to the stadium this year if we could swing it.
It was really cool. They were obviously building it still when I was there, and to see the progress they made in a week. They were actually putting up Allegiant. You know, when we got there, I think VA was there. By the time we left, it was Allegiant Stadium. And it was just, it was like I was there for part of the process.
You know? Yeah. It consists, it's 70,000 square feet, 70,000 square feet. It stretches for more than 120 yards. It weighs 2.2 million pounds. And I was mad at my scale this morning. 2.2 million pounds. And it has more than 260 speakers embedded in it.
That is a bit overkill, maybe.
The wattage. This says the watt. Everything in Vegas is overkill. That's why it's Vegas, man. This is L.A.
Yeah, this is L.A.
Yeah, this is L.A. So this is way. This is over the top Hollywood glamour to, you know, get all those celebrities in the stadium. The wattage that it takes to power this video board would power more than 1,500 home theater systems.
Goodness.
And it might not even open up this year because of what the governor of California has already said.
Yeah, that would be a bummer because I'm sure they have some money to pay back on that thing.
Yeah, only like $6 billion or something like that.
Not a whole lot.
Adrian Wojnarowski has announced that J.R. Smith has gone ahead and signed with the Lakers. So yes. You know that deal is done. If Woj is reporting it, it's done. And then this is really cool. And I've got to look up the time, and I will give everybody that because I got off the tweet thread, so I don't have the time. But VFL Films, so one, you already know it's going to be good. I haven't even told you what it is, but if VFL Films did it, it's going to be awesome. There's a Johnny Majors documentary that they have put together, and it's going to air coming up later on this week on ESPNU. How cool is that?
That's awesome. Yeah, it's going to be played coming up here this Saturday, right?
Is it Saturday?
I think I'll double check. We got an email about it. I'm pretty sure it's this Saturday. And yeah, it's going to be awesome. So, you know, get some time, sit back down, watch that. And obviously, with the passing of Coach Majors a couple of weeks ago, it's a nice time to reflect. And I think that's really, really cool. You'll get to see some great football, get to hear some great sayings, and see the coach back in action.
And then you had like a little recruiting update that you just tweeted about. Somebody from Nebraska is picking up, or a Nebraska commit is picking up an offer from the Vols.
Oh, yeah. So I just tweeted out an article I wrote for VolQuest. Linebacker Christopher Lewis picked up an offer from Tennessee. He's a Nebraska commit. He's a 3-star from North Carolina. And so I just tweeted that article that I wrote out for VolQuest about it. Another, you know, Tennessee's continuing to get out there and recruit hard and fast and furious like Mac Brown at North Carolina. And
man, Mac is killing it.
He is.
Gosh, he is killing it. I just wonder, are they truly going to finish in the top five for this recruiting cycle? Because it's looking more and more likely.
How about Tennessee or Carolina?
Carolina.
Oh, I think so.
Tennessee, it's going to be hard. It's gonna be tough. Because they've got to lose some of the lower guys, and they've got to keep piling on the 4 and possibly 5-star guys, because when you look at the rating, because everybody's going to finish with 20 plus recruits, you know, 20, 25 recruits. So that's when you'll start seeing Tennessee tick down if they don't boost that blue chip ratio rating.
Alabama's coming.
You know they're coming. Alabama's coming. 25th right now, which is crazy. For it to be in July and them to be that low, I bet a little bit of Tide fans are getting nervous.
They shouldn't, because they'll come. But again, and you know, Jeremy Pruitt's, just because they have 23 known commits right now, Jeremy Pruitt's going to continue to recruit those five stars, those four stars, going to try to get them on campus, and that's allowed. And if they want to commit, Tennessee will take them. And sometimes the numbers, we always hear the numbers work themselves out in college recruiting, whether that's having the tough conversations or whatnot, or that you see writing on the wall, things will happen the way it's supposed to. So that's for sure.
Jeremy Pruitt was on the Dan Patrick Show today touting that Tennessee has not had any positive COVID-19 tests for any players at this point in time, and that they are going to be retested after the holiday weekend for 4th of July this week. So when they return to campus, they will be tested again, and we'll keep you up to date on all the latest there. But Dan Patrick also trying to have a little fun with Jeremy Pruitt. You'll hear that audio coming up next on Sports 180.
Ready for some more dad jokes?
No! God, please, no! No!
Tread lightly. Here's Josh and Heather on Sports 180.
Jeremy Pruitt, this morning, he was up bright and early to be on the Dan Patrick Show today. And Dan Patrick and the Danettes, they had a little bit of fun after Jeremy Pruitt was on the air.
Say it to his face.
Yeah, but they definitely tried. I mean, Dan was trying to engage with Jeremy Pruitt and kind of be a little more lighthearted. But here are some of the excerpts from Jeremy Pruitt's visit with Dan Patrick earlier today.
I was looking at the quarterbacks you've coached against when your stay at Tennessee. Jared Stidham, Tua, Drew Locke, Jake Fromm, Will Greer. Who was the toughest to prepare for out of that group?
I'm sure all these guys present different problems, but you know that's kind of in the past. I'm kind of looking.
Have a little bit of fun, Coach. Come on.
I'm looking to the future to see who we've got to compete against.
Come on. Who was the toughest one out of that group? Because I'm curious about Stidham. He seems a little bit more of a mystery there. Tua, we know a lot about. Lockett feels like he's coming on. And not sure about Fromm and Greer. But tell me about Stidham.
Well, you know, that was a couple of years ago. So, you know, the system that he played in, you know, they really throw the ball more down the field. There's not a lot of RPOs and stuff. So, you know, we actually had a good day against him. I mean, over the last couple of years, it's been pretty obvious in our league, the guys that we've played against. You know, Tua's been as good as anybody I've coached against in a long time. And I felt like Jake Fromm did a nice job as far as managing, you know, his offense over the last 3 years that we competed against him.
Does it help? You were a high school quarterback. I think went to college to be a quarterback. Does it help as a defensive-minded guy that you've played the position? Does that help at all?
Well, I think when you start talking about defense, if you want to be good defensively, you got to start from the back end and work your way forward. So being able to eliminate explosive plays really starts with the defensive back. So whether it's in the throw game or squeezing the runs off, so. You know, I do think that probably my experience as a quarterback in high school helps me have a little bit better understanding of what people are trying to do offensively.
Who plays the position the way you played quarterback?
The way I played quarterback?
Yeah.
I would say most of them play it much better than I did.
Yeah, but were you a Brady like? Were you a Rodgers like? An option guy? Cam Newton guy?
I wouldn't say I was like any of those guys.
I absolutely love that part. I wouldn't say I was like any of those. Dan Patrick went on to say he thought it was fascinating, and he's always intrigued by players or coaches who say, or sorry, not say, but who end up playing one position and then coaching on the absolute opposite side of the ball, you know, for the fact that Jeremy Pruitt played offense in high school and then becomes a defensive coordinator, one of the best defensive coordinators. I mean, that's kind of a fascinating transition.
Oh, I mean, I guarantee you go and talk to David Cutcliffe, he can tell you everything about every style of defense, every front, every, blitz, every twist, every turn, every style of defense, because that's all he does is study it. And so some of the best offensive coaches make some of the better defensive coaches. Some of the former quarterbacks make great defensive back coaches. It's really just all in the game because, you know, when I played, I was a linebacker. I did nothing but study offenses all day long. And so,
so yeah. You think you would be a good play caller? You think you would be a good OC?
Oh,
I mean,
goodness.
That's the nuance that's involved. I mean, that's crazy. Just because you know what the offense is going to do doesn't necessarily translate into this is how I would call an offense if true. I were on that side of the ball.
No, I guess play calling is different, like as far as teaching position. Like right now, I could teach offensive line, very confident I could teach offensive line because that's who I went up against. That's who I watched the steps, the different type of blocking schemes and all that. I couldn't coach a quarterback how to throw. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think it's more or less in coaching. Play calling is a little bit different, but I could coach up some O-linemen for sure.
Yeah. It's wild and it's really cool to think about. So you heard a little bit of Jeremy Pruitt's personality come out at the end, but those guys, they had a field day with Jeremy Pruitt, his kind of just very short, succinct answers. And that was from this morning when Jeremy Pruitt joined the Dan Patrick Show. So you'll have to listen to it later on when you have time, Eric, and give me your feedback. You have to text me.
I want to hear how bad exactly it was because the clips that we played on here, and again,
they sound pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was on the air this morning, so I didn't get to listen to it, but people text me about it. And it sounds like I was like, okay, I haven't really noticed anything yet. But everything people were texting me saying, God, this is miserable. He doesn't want to be here. It's like, well, have you ever watched one of his press conferences? I get it.
Yeah, dealing with the media, definitely not one of Coach Pruitt's more favorite aspects
of
the job.
He's gotten a lot better, though.
But I will say this, because they talked about, as they were teasing him when he was off the air, they were talking about his recruiting prowess, and they're like, you know, you got to give Tennessee credit. I mean, they're absolutely just killing it on the recruiting trail and this and that. And you know, one of the Danettes was just like, oh, so do you think you want to come to Tennessee? And I was like, you have to know, and you follow recruiting. You follow it way more than I do. These guys that are great recruiters but seem like dull duds on the outside, they've got a switch that flips in them. It's like Trey Smith. Trey Smith is, I think if you met him outside of the library or on Cumberland Avenue, he would be the nicest person ever. You definitely don't want to meet him on a football field because he will rip your head off. Well, I mean, he's got that switch.
Yeah, not only during the play, but
maybe a little bit afterwards.
Watch Trey Smith when the whistle's blown and tell me he doesn't stop with the whistle every single time. And again, I'm not calling him a dirty player whatsoever, but a lot of great players have that mentality. And Cade Mays...
Play through it.
Cade Mays is the same way, too. That's why he gets eligible. Tennessee's two guards this year, my goodness, are just going to be just nasty.
Yeah, it's
everything
gonna be so legit.
Everything you want in an offensive lineman.
The fact that you have your interior line with so much experience, I mean, that's something that we have been talking about time and time again. But Jeremy Pruitt, he's such a good recruiter. Mm-hmm. My point is, he's got a switch. We don't ever get to see it because he's not recruiting my sons at, you know, 4 and almost 2.
You mean to tell me
he should.
He hadn't been calling Woodrow yet. I mean, Woodrow's already about as big as a... No, just that boy's going to be offensive lineman. Yeah. But you're right. Jeremy Pruitt has that switch. I've talked to so many recruits. I've talked to so many targets Tennessee's after. And I say, you know, what do you like about Jeremy Pruitt? He's, you know, coached Alabama. He's coached a lot of great players. And they're like, nah, he gets us. He talks to us. He asks us more about, you know, other than football, ask about family. He FaceTimes my mom, and you're right. He's got that switch. He communicates and relates so well to young guys, and then obviously coaches them well, too.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk to Braden Gall coming up next from Athlon Sports. What does college football look like this fall, and what did he think of Jeremy Pruitt's appearance on the Dan Patrick Show? We'll ask Braden coming up next on Sports 180 on the Sports Animal.
This is VFL Josh Malone, and we're counting it down. It is just
66 days until
it's football time in Tennessee.
This Sports Radio WNML countdown to kickoff is brought to you by Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Find out more at tvacreditunion.com.
Go on!
Fenton Gates hotline to bring on Braden Gall of Athlon Sports and the Cover 2 podcast. Braden, another day of waiting, but it is July 1st and sports is set to return. So how excited are you for today?
You mean as a Mets fan getting to pay Bobby Bonilla $1 million? It's like one of my favorite holidays of the year for sure.
Spoiler alert: we do a power ranking every day at the end of the show, our power poll, and in honor of Bobby Bonilla Day, we're going to rank the top five most overpaid athletes of all time.
Yep. No, I'm aware. It's the contract you can't outrun as a fan.
Hey, Jeremy Pruitt was on the Dan Patrick Show earlier today, Braden, and had kind of just said that Tennessee at this point in time is very fortunate because they've had no positive COVID-19 tests for the players. They do plan on retesting them after this 3-day holiday weekend. How do you take in that information, and what do you think that it means in the grand scheme of what everybody's dealing with?
I'm not really sure what it means. I mean, other than awesome, right? Like, it's awesome news, and heck, we could all use a little good news right now. So I think it's great that that is the case. I'm excited about that. I think much like with every football program, you know, the NHL players who can't stop from going out at night and keep testing positive. Like, it's still, you know, you're worried about a bunch of kids going back and doing whatever they do on a 3-day weekend, like you mentioned, a holiday weekend where, you know, and it's funny, like, this is an experience I had just like last weekend. There was a bunch of people over next door to us, fairly young, probably mid-20s, and probably 20 people at this house, and all of them are wearing masks at the start of the evening. And I'm like, oh, look at that. The guys got men and women doing the right things, being responsible. And by the time, you know, my wife and I went to bed pretty early, it was probably like 11 o'clock or something, and we, you know, we had some friends on the back porch, and we're having porch beers, and we go inside, my friends leave, and we go to bed, and it's 11 o'clock, and by that time, it's like a scene off the strip. Like, they're out on the back porch and they got their arms around each other and they're talking louder. And it's what happens when young people get together, and you just sort of lose control of the diligence. Right. And it just sort of happens on its own. It doesn't happen because you're affiliated with a Democrat or a Republican. It doesn't happen because you believe or not believe in the coronavirus. It's just young people just don't have as much at stake right now. Mentally, it's not top of mind. And, you know, we've got sick grandparents in my family. We've got, you know, immunocompromised parents. We just are far more aware of it. And so you just wonder about 130 schools around the country, you know, with probably 200 or 300. I mean, you include medical personnel, you include all this stuff. Like, I think it's amazing that Tennessee hasn't had somebody test positive, right? Like, I think that's amazing. So if you can keep that up, whatever Tennessee's doing needs to be like sent out in a press release to every university in America. like do what they're doing, because there's a chance if you keep this up and you stay diligent and vigilant and the rest of the fans do the same, there's a chance we could get football back, but you've got to be diligent about it. And so I'm it's amazing that's where they are. I give them a lot of credit for that. I'd like to hear more stories like that from around the country. And the problem is that it's just a rolling test field, right? Like, you're going to have to do it. You're going to have to test every week, almost every day, to keep people, you know, to make sure you're sort of maximizing efficiency. So it's a great first sign, but it doesn't mean a whole lot for next week or the week after or the week after, or once they actually start contact, right? Like, that's going to change things too.
Hey, Braden, Tennessee, of course, to Governor Lee's extension of the state of emergency, you know, delaying the start of college football season for sure here in 2020 high school football. They're still going over some certain scenarios on when exactly they will get going and what the season might look like. But do you think that's going to have a major effect on recruiting in-state kids here in Tennessee?
I think it really affects the late bloomer, right? I mean, not to sound like Al Bundy, but I didn't start until my senior year, and I started my senior year and, you know, was all region my senior year and got some small offers. But if I hadn't played that year, I would never even had a chance to even like be on the field, frankly. Like, so I think if there's kids that have worked really hard to sort of, you know, build strength and develop their game and in hopes of getting a scholarship, I think those are the players that, you know, are going to be much, much harder to find if you're coaching staffs. And frankly, it sucks for everybody, right? It sucks for the coaching staff. It sucks for the fans. It sucks for the players. It's just something that I don't think many people, myself included, have thought about, is just how many Kevin Byards are there in the world, right? Where, you know, he you end up at Middle Tennessee because you know Kentucky didn't want to offer you, and all of a sudden you turn into the best safety in the world, right? Like, if you're good, if you're that good, you'll be fine. But that's not the majority of kids who sign scholarships to go to college, and so I think there's a, you know, I hadn't even thought about that perspective, but if high schools around the country aren't able to play as many games, or, you know, if it's impacted in any way, it's really going to affect a lot of people. And that's a, you know, that's probably an angle that not many people are considering right now.
Well, and I know Braden, we're talking to Braden Gall, Athlon Sports, that you cut your teeth on the recruiting trail, covering recruiting for a while. The fact that the dead periods keep getting extended, and I know Ari Wasserman at least is on the record with The Athletic that earlier this week saying he's doubtful that you're going to see official visits this fall for these prospective athletes and recruits. What kind of impact would that also have on just what recruiting is going to look like for 2021 and the future?
So I think that's a great question. And the two things, if you've ever worked in the recruiting world, you know that the two most, the two factors that sort of dictate where a player will go almost exclusively are geographic location. So how far are you from a campus? And did you take an official visit? If you are within X amount of miles and you took an official visit, your chances of landing that player are extremely high, right? Those are the two biggest dictators of where a kid goes in general, not doesn't apply to every kid. It's just sort of a generality for every recruit in general. And so if you eliminate one of those factors altogether, which is one of the most important elements of, do I feel at home here? Do I like my coaching staff? Do I like my position coach? Do I like my teammates? Do I like living on this campus? I get that official visits are filled with sort of like showing athletes a great time, and it's a party, and it's like, here are the best things that we have to offer. And then you show up as a freshman and you're getting screamed at, and you get, and there's a de-recruiting process, of course, that happens that we all know about. And it's about sales at that point, but you have to be comfortable with where you're going. You have to be comfortable with the people you're going to be around. And so if you can't do that as much, I don't know what it means as far as people that change their mind. But you can 100% look at it and say, man, if kid X had come to campus and fell in love automatically because they just were on campus with just, they just love the vibe. Like, and there's certain campuses that do that, and every player has their own perspective and their own, you know, likes and dislikes. That's 100% how kids make a decision. So, if all of a sudden you can't go to Auburn, which is sort of the only thing happening in that town, but you love that as a player and you didn't know that you were going to love that, but you get down there and you go, man, I love this kind of thing. I love this vibe. I need to go to Auburn. Well, if you never go to Auburn, you may never have any clue that you like it there or not. So it's a big factor. And I think it puts more pressure on coaches to be really, really diligent in the virtual world to make sure that they're sort of building relationships as well as they can. And, you know, you're going to have, you know, how creative can you get? Can you offer kids virtual tours, right? Like, are you FaceTiming around the campus? You know, like what can you do to show off what you got, and you know, how do you show off what campus life is like to somebody on a phone? It's hard to do.
Yeah, virtual tours are very much a thing right now. A number of the recruits that I talked to, and you're right about, you get them on campus, they fall in love. I mean, Hudson Wolf, who, you know, four-star Tennessee tight end that committed a couple weeks ago, you know, he had been on campus many, many times, but he was also on campus the day of the shutdown. I remember because I talked to him, and then that's when, you know, Greg Sankey put that first, you know, in-person ban on, you know, for coronavirus. And so he was just at Tennessee, and that was the last thing in his mind. And so, you know, fast forward 6 weeks later when he commits, that's still fresh on his mind. So I think that helped Tennessee as well. But you look at North Carolina, and, you know, just picked up another, you know, top 15 recruit in the nation. That's now 17. That was a five-star. Mac Brown's got Carolina in the top 10. I know the Carolinas are loaded for 2021. Do you envision North Carolina being a big player in recruiting for 2021?
I mean, you have to think so. I mean, Mac Brown's made a living recruiting for three decades probably now at both North Carolina, Texas, and now back at North Carolina. And as sort of the founder and co-founder and owner and operator of the Sam Howell Fan Club, I can tell you I'm tuned in very closely to what North Carolina is doing this year, because that's a really, really good football team and could actually be a 10 or 11 win team into the ACC championship game again, assuming all this stuff happens. So I think it's a really dangerous team to keep an eye out. It certainly doesn't help teams like Tennessee or Clemson or Georgia that recruit this area so heavily. But, you know, I don't – it can't help those teams, but I don't think it's a huge factor seeing as how it's ACC. I mean, unless they become Clemson-level good.
Yeah, go ahead and put him on hold, and we'll try to reconnect here with Braden Gall as a little bit of a phone issue. Go ahead and see if Braden's back there, Eric.
Is he there, Sam?
Okay.
Hey, Braden, you there?
Sorry about that, guys.
Okay, there we go.
What's going on with the headphones?
Technology.
I didn't feed the hamster this morning. I got to go feed the hamster. So I think last point on sort of the official visit thing, just real quickly. I think it's going to hurt the North and the powers in the Northeast and the West Coast. And I think it hurts teams that can't fly kids in. It doesn't hurt the SEC nearly as much because it can just say, hey, hop in a car, stay safe, get up here in a couple of hours, whether it's Tuscaloosa, Auburn, Athens, Knoxville, you know, Lexington, whatever. I think if you can take on, you can still promote unofficials to some degree, right? Like, what's going to stop somebody and their parent from driving up to take a look at to drive through campus and stay in their car, right? Like, you can still do your diligence as a parent and as a recruit in the unofficial world. It doesn't mean you're touring facilities or doing anything official, but you can still at least get a vibe. And you can't do that if you're Ohio State and you're recruiting kids in Florida. Like, that's just not going to happen. So I think it's a big advantage for those campuses that are, once again, within driving distance of all the prospects, which is largely the SEC footprint, Texas and Florida.
Well, and maybe that'll bring Ohio State recruiting back down to normal levels. I mean, they've been killing it as well, this recruiting cycle. So absolutely crazy. Hey, great stuff. Braden, I saw you teasing maybe some big news coming. So I wanted to ask you about that and about what's going on the Cover 2 podcast.
I'm just trolling the internet today because it's Wednesday and I feel like, you know, people need something to look at. No, there's things happening, but the Cover 2 podcast is probably going to be the first place that I'll let anybody know about what's happening. So just make sure you're subscribed, rating and reviewing as well, all those good things. So we did a giant deep dive into the Group of Five this week. So if you're really interested in finding out about App State and Cincinnati and UCF and Memphis, then check out the pod.
All right, that sounds awesome. Braden Gall from Athlon Sports and the Cover 2 podcast. We appreciate you joining us today, Braden, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Braden.
And in honor of Braden Gall and Tyler Ivins and Bobby Bonilla, we're going to come back and have a special power poll for those guys coming up next. John Wilkerson also set to join the program as he's getting ready for Sports Talk coming up in just a few moments. We'll be back with the power poll next on Sports 180.
If it weren't for sports, we'd be forced to play that crap other stations play. Anybody need that? Nobody. 99.1, the sports animal.
Earlier for not having the correct day and time when we were talking about the new VFL Films feature that is going to be showcased on ESPNU coming up. It's going to be Friday at 8 o'clock. So Friday, 8 o'clock, VFL Films presents a Johnny Majors documentary. And I saw some of the people that were involved in it. You've got Sterl the Pearl that is doing interviews for this documentary, just so many different people, even Max Parrott and some different longtime UT guys. I think it's going to be really exciting and really fun, especially for the younger people that are out there that maybe didn't know as much or why their parents had such an attachment to Johnny Majors.
Yeah, it's kind of documentary season right now with everything going on with The Last Dance, then Long Gone Summer and the Jackie Chan documentary and all that stuff. And
Jackie Chan? Excuse me,
Bruce Lee documentary.
Oh my gosh, 90s kid.
I know, right? And so it's really, really fun too. And I mean, I love documentaries because I like to learn. And for a lot of great moments in sports, I was either really, really young or I wasn't alive yet. And so for the, you know, pretty much everything Johnny Majors related to Tennessee, I was not alive.
Yeah.
And so,
have you talked to your dad or your parents about Johnny Majors?
I knew who Johnny Majors was growing up and everything, but like get to go back and kind of see it firsthand, mm-hmm. or at least footage of it. So I'm excited. And you know, the interviews that they're going to have, it's going to be a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to it.
Besides The Last Dance, which has been your favorite ESPN documentary that they have done?
Long Gone Summer was pretty good. I kind of wanted a little bit more, but I
from
still
from McGuire and them.
Yeah. But I still thought it was good. I will say this, after watching that, I want to see one on Barry Bonds now, without a doubt.
You do?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. I mean,
I thought Mark McGuire was really candid.
Yeah, I thought he was good.
I appreciated everything that he brought to the table.
Yeah, I did too.
Poor Sammy too. I feel bad for him. He's got some issues.
Yeah. But I was entertained. It was good. But just, I know it was about the race in 98 and how it saved baseball. I get all that.
It was
that.
Amazing.
But like they didn't even mention, I mean, they barely mentioned the very end. It's like, well, four seasons later, five seasons of Barry Bonds comes and breaks this record. And I was just kind of like, well, that's the story I want to see coming up too. So yeah, aren't they making a Tom Brady series like next year?
I think so. There's something, you know, he's bought a production company and he's now getting involved in some different production elements. So there's something coming on Tom Brady. My favorite one was Lance Armstrong. Loved it. I thought it was so well done. He is absolutely just crazy. I don't know. I walked away with a lot of different feelings, not good ones, towards Lance Armstrong, who I idolized when he was actually getting me interested in bicycle riding.
I caught about 45 minutes of the first episode. It was a two-part, right? Yeah.
So yeah, it was two.
I caught about 40 minutes of part one.
The only other person I know that watched it was Jimmy Himes, and all we could do was text about it because, like, we're on so close together, we never could talk. We did talk one morning. I called him at, like, 9 a.m. to ask him a different question. Then I was like, did you watch any of that, Lance? And so we did get to catch up on it a little bit.
Yeah, no one else that I know except for you guys now watched it. And again, I didn't watch the next one, but it was fine. I was learning a little bit, too. I mean, it's hard to really, 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 really bash him because of all the money he kind of raised for, you know, cancer research and all that. But still, it was, why was the documentary? Why was it compelling?
I don't think it's that hard to criticize him. Yes, he did a lot of good and helped a lot of different people, whether it was him being candid in interviews about dealing with cancer and the after effects of cancer treatments, which is documented in the piece. But also, when you try to ruin somebody's life for telling the truth about you, I got a problem with that.
Yeah.
You know? So on one hand, he was helping save people's lives. On the other hand, he was trying to destroy them. I mean, it's a really interesting story. But that
makes good TV.
And then, of course, The Last Dance was just, like, incredible.
I mean, I can't remember the last time, you know, we say appointment television. I mean, I got all my stuff done. I got my clothes laid. I mean, I wake up at like 4:45, 4:30. I got my clothes laid out. I got everything ready to roll. And I was laying in my bed ready at 8:55 every Sunday for 6 weeks.
There's some high profile NBA player that waited to watch it so he could binge watch it all. So he had to wait the five weeks and stay away from social media. I forget who it is. I'm like kicking myself that I can't remember. I read that earlier this week and I was like, I don't even know how you did it, because I was like you. I mean, that was the one thing that me and Glenn have watched together. And I mean, I caught him watching like episodes one and I think two, like multiple times. Like he just loved it so much.
And for us, we needed the content. So, and it was great content. It was fantastic content. So
water in the desert. Hey, with that being said, happy Bobby Bonilla Day. It is July 1st. Sports is actually supposed to return this month. Everybody, knock on wood. Let's go ahead and hit today's power poll.
Captain, we're losing power on the warp engine.
Nuclear power plant.
What's up? I'm Kenny Powers.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
I have the power!
With great power comes great responsibility.
Full power, Mr. Scott.
The Power Pole, driven by Ted Russell Ford. Two locations to serve you, Kingston Pike and Parkside Drive.
So in honor of Bobby Bonilla still collecting a paycheck from the Mets until 2035, we got a ways to go. Man, Mets fans, I mean, just being the butt of the joke for that long, that just sucks.
Or if you know a Mets fan, it doesn't suck. It's good. Pile on him.
I know. Especially after Pete Alonso won the home run derby last year. You don't want to give them any more credit than you can. No. So kick those Mets fans while they're down. But in honor of Bobby Bonilla Day today, we are ranking the top five most overpaid athletes of all time. Eric Kane, what does your list look like?
All right, so this might not be like down to the cent, but these are some names that came to mind and some others that I left out. But I'll start the conversation. Number five, Albert Pujols. It was not a good contract, had a Hall of Fame career in St. Louis. Signed 10 years, $240 million to L.A., not been the same since. Andrew Wiggins, didn't know that he played for Golden State. Must have been a midseason trade. He's currently getting paid $147 million through 2023. Joe Kim Noah, get this, Heather, on Bobby Bonilla Day back in 2016, Joe Kim Noah got paid $72 million through 2022. Don't you think New York has learned its lesson? I guess not. Chris Davis. Oh, Crush Davis, not been doing a whole lot of crushing lately, getting paid by the O's through 2022. And Bobby Bonilla, number one, getting paid every year $1 million+ on this day until 2035.
It really isn't even like Bobby Bonilla is overpaid the way the Mets structured the deal, because of all that money coming in from Bernie Madoff. They were like, we can renegotiate this to pay him for the long term. Oops. Didn't work out so good.
Whoops.
John Wilkerson joining us now. Sports Talk just a few minutes away. Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon. Hope you guys are doing great.
We're doing good.
Doing what better now.
Yeah. What direction did your power pole go in today?
Number five, I went with Prince Fielder. 9 years, $214 million when he signed his big term deal. After that, it was, I put at number four, it's the same term, same deal, Ryan Howard with the Phillies, number four, Josh Hamilton with the Angels, number three, each got 5 years, $125 million. It was a mistake for the Phillies. It was a disaster for the Angels.
Yes.
And then at number two, I go with John Wall and the Wizards. 4 years, $169 million. The good thing is he's actually had to play a handful of games in the sense of that contract. And then number one, who else could it be but Bobby Bonilla. He's just cashing the big check today and each year until 2035, as Eric pointed out.
My honorable mention goes to the last big paycheck that they both cashed for an absolute abysmal fight, Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather. In your primes, you guys were worth every red cent, but this last fight was terrible, and I want my money back. Okay, number five for me, I'm going to go with A-Rod, just because it all ended up being fake and enhanced numbers that you were paying for in New York, and how many times did he sign the biggest deal in sports and set those records. Number four, I've got Josh Hamilton. Number three, all disgruntled Cowboy fans will nod their heads. Roy Williams, supposed to be an absolute lockdown player. He basically was like third or fourth in the rotation by the end of his career. Just terrible, terrible contract. Sam Bradford signing the highest guarantee and then just not panning out. That's going to be my number two spot. And then number one for me, Jamarcus Russell.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Man, what a bad deal that was.
Oh, goodness. Undone by the purple drink.
John Wilkerson, what's coming up on Sports Talk today?
Well, we are loaded for bear once again. We'll be excited to talk with VFL Films' Barry Rice. As boy, he's just one of those that does great work year in, year out. But he'll join us at 3:35 to talk about the Johnny Majors documentary that'll air this Friday on ESPNU. We also look forward to being joined by Craig Halbert, who is the National Recruiting Coordinator for ESPN. That'll be at 4:05. VFL, now with the Minnesota Twins organization, Alaric Solari, supposed to join us at 4:35. No John McClain today. He had real work to do, so he'll join us Friday. So pinch hitting, literally and figuratively, Tennessee baseball coach Tony Vitello. We look forward to catching up with Charlotte coach Will Healy. That's who Tennessee opens up against this fall. Fingers crossed. And Jeremy Pruitt was on the Dan Patrick Show today, so we'll bring you comments from that. All of that and more today on Sports Talk.
John, our face-off question earlier today, moving forward, should Jeremy Pruitt have to wear orange in all of his national media appearances?
at least some way, shape, or form, whether it be an orange power tee or something. Yeah, why not?
I think he did probably have a power tee on his shirt. It looked like the standard issue smoky gray polo, you know, like a golf shirt. But the way his computer was angled, you just couldn't see the power tee. And Dan was giving him a hard time. He was like, I wanted to see some orange. So it's funny. All right, we're going to be staying tuned for Sports Talk. That's coming up next. Thanks to John Wilkerson for joining the program. Eric Kane, great work today. We will talk to you again tomorrow.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, Sports 180 will be back on the airwaves tomorrow at noon. Thanks, Sam Foreman, also at the Budweiser Studios. But here comes Sports Talk next on the Sports Animal.